You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Natasha Marin. Natasha, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me.
Natasha, let's talk about what you're working on at the moment, if that's appropriate, or a recent project. I know you're a poet and an interdisciplinary artist, but to begin talking to you about projects and introducing listeners to exactly how you use multiple forms, is there perhaps your city-funded project? Is that in progress right now, or should we talk about something else that's happening?
I've had several contracts with the city of Seattle, which is great. It's nice to live in a place where there still is some arts funding. But currently,
kind of incredible. Sorry to interrupt, but it's kind of amazing, really, to have a city that supports your work. That's something that's quite rare, as I find in talking to artists in the United States. That that local city is so supportive.
Yeah, it is nice to live in a place where arts funding is still a thing. Like it still happens, but
right.
We'll see how long that lasts. Considering our current political climate is not terribly supportive to the arts. My latest project is called The Center for Centering White Women, and you can find it on Facebook. And it's kind of like a, I call it syntext, because there is now this thing that exists that doesn't really have a name, so I've made up this name, syntext, but you can now tag people, colloquially. So there are groups like, sounds like white feminism, but okay, or, sort of like, thanks for mansplaining that to me. And you can tag people and use this colloquially, in digital conversation. I had an event called Do You Need Diversity Training? And you could tag the event, Do You Need Diversity Training, in conversation. So if somebody says something questionable, you could tag, do you need diversity training? And it would take them to
the
event.
Oh, that's great.
If you're in a difficult conversation with a white woman who is centering her feelings and making it all about her emotions and not, say, black lives, you can tag the Center for Centering White Women. And it only exists for that purpose.
And so that's very interesting. I mean, because we're just talking about the kind of social media, tags that you're creating, which generate communities, which, allow people to respond in similar ways, as you were saying over, in the case of the Center for Centering White Women. Was that the name of it?
Yes, that's the name of it. And people can find the Center for Centering White Women on Facebook just by putting in the Center for Centering White Women in the search bar. I think it's a group or a page. I cannot remember which it is.
And so maybe just walk me through one instance of it being used. So someone's on Facebook, they see a particular comment or they're getting into a discussion, and then they tag the Center for Centering White Women, and what would happen next? Like how would that just play those steps?
Let's say you're in a meeting and or you're in a thread, you're seeing people comment on a thread, and maybe it's something, I don't know, maybe it's innocuous, maybe it's not terribly pertinent to your life and your entirety of your humanity, but somebody makes, maybe your lived experience calls into question your lived experience as a person of color, because they want to center their feelings. This often happens when people experience some pushback, but I have a black friend that says it's okay. Well, I'm a black person in front of you right now telling you that's not okay. But I didn't mean to, blah, 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 blah. This isn't about
right.
Your intentions. Everyone has great intentions. It's about the impact of, your actions and your words. And so when people are having difficulty wrapping their minds around this, for many of us as people of color, it's a lot of emotional labor to sort of be a midwife or a doula through white people's understandings and deeper understandings. So rather than exerting yourself and expending any energy whatsoever clarifying for this person, that they're being wrongheaded and white supremacist in their inability to see outside of themselves. You can just tag the Center for Centering White Women, and it does the work for you.
I love that. So it's giving them the information, and in that particular group, there's information and discussion to understand a little bit more about what you would
really
normally say in response repetitively to similar situations.
Yeah, it really is a playful way to bring about a deeper understanding. So I would file this under anti-troll tactics.
Right, I like that. And how does that play out? So that's how it moves forward,
that's
how it works, and then what happens
to people?
Anybody can
tag this when they're first entering white women.
But I guess what I'm asking is, so is then there a discussion, active discussion on that page that seems to be actually helpful? Because it's so interesting, especially using social media to kind of try to illuminate certain ideas to people. It often seems that everyone's just stuck with whatever their idea is, and there isn't much actual listening going on or people becoming educated in some ways. Do you find that's actually happening in the Center for Centering White Women at all, or is that not entirely the point?
Well, I think one of the things that great comedians show us all the time is that people can learn from that moment of laughter. Like, you can learn something about yourself. And, we have various types or states of digital laughter, one of which is like LOL. And we know very well that you're not necessarily laughing out loud in actuality when you are feeling LOL. When you get to the Center for Centering White Women, maybe somebody has tagged you. And so you get a notification that you've been tagged in the Center for Centering White Women, and you get there and you read what it's about, and then you realize, okay, this is kind of a joke. Like, it's a joking way of making fun of people who are not aware that they're being so self-centered, that they're unable to see anything more nuanced than sort of like their selfie stick in front of their face. So one of the posts from June in the Center for Centering White Women says, if you have survived the hate crime of being called a Becky, please contact us, the Center for Centering White Women. So this is making fun of people who think that, say, like, you could equate Becky with, like, the N-word.
Mm.
But there are people, there are people, and there are many studies that have been done that say that white-identified folks actually believe that they experience more discrimination than people of color do, which is asinine. So there's plenty of dumb people out there to tag.
So it's very interesting. Right. So does it I understand what you're saying in that respect. So it doesn't actually, because people obviously interpret this and it's a way of just addressing the issue in some ways, but is it also transformative in any way, or is it intended to be that this could actually change the way a white person would then perceive a similar situation or how?
I have no idea. In the theoretical world where in which there is an actual foundation, like a center where white women can go and focus solely on themselves as a designated physical space for this, that would be amazing, because that would free up all the other spaces where currently white-identified people are centering themselves. So I think a lot of people would be really thrilled if that actually existed. But for now, it exists as sort of like a social experiment. There is a digital space where you can send people sort of like a purgatory. And I don't know if that will have a deep or profound effect on anybody, but it will provide some relief to people of color who get exhausted from the emotional labor of educating people. Nobody appreciates when you point out something that they're doing wrong. But it's actually a really generous thing to point out when somebody's doing something wrong. Like, if I say to you, hey, that might be a little racist, you want to think about that a little bit. I'm giving you an opportunity to grow and evolve and be better, But if
right.
you're just too butthurt to grasp, you know, what I'm doing, and you just want to get instantaneously defensive, then I've got to exert myself, try to convince you that I'm helping you. But that's like fighting somebody to give them $20. I don't want to do that.
Right.
It's tiring and it's exhausting for me. So I think this offers, like, transformative possibility to people of color, because I don't know that people of color need to be doing all the work of educating white-identified folks about the effects of white-centered thinking. And everything is white-centered. Like, it already is. The default setting is white-centered. So whether or not anyone is trying to do that, that's what's happening. And you have to work against that to do something else.
Right, which is of course the irony in the title of the group, the Center for Centering White Women. I mean, it's also a social media phenomenon, isn't it? As you just talked about, you know, people actually listening, or you said something else, but you know, actually reacting in a way other than just digging in their heels to a question. That's also an online phenomenon, isn't it? I mean, if I'm talking to somebody, if I'm in a relationship, or I just have a friend who says to me at some point, or she says to me, I'm uncomfortable with you saying that, or something like that, there would be no reason why, well, I suppose it would always be a reason why people can always argue, but I would think in person, we're talking about kind of relationships and understanding one another that would, I would imagine, be easier to happen, or is easier to happen, as opposed to social media, where everybody seems to just dig their heels in and fight for their original idea, whatever it was. Do you know what I mean?
People get really brave on social media, for sure. You know, social media, the platforms that exist, definitely make people feel emboldened to say or do things that they wouldn't necessarily do, you know, IRL in real life. But I think what social media is really showing us are sort of like the cultures, the new sort of digital anthropology that's coming out of social media, is that folks love to be offended. They just love it. Just love to be offended. And being offended is so cheap and readily available as an experience that there has to be more than that. There just has to be, because anybody can get offended. Anybody does get offended. People get offended at everything. I'm shocked and a little amazed that just the use of the word white could drive people that you think are cool and down just absolutely, like, berserk. So, you know, if you started just inserting the word white into, like, your average communication, like, I went to the white store, I walked on the white street to get to the white store, and I was talking to the white cashier when I was there. And, you know, she asked me if I wanted, like, a white paper bag or a white plastic bag. And I said I was fine. I would just carry it in my hand. And then she said goodbye in this really white way. Like, by the end of that story, people are aggravated. Like, their teeth are on edge because they're so not used to hearing that. But this is what's happening, like, in real life. Like, we are walking down the white street to go to the white store to talk to the white teller. And it certainly works that way when you're black. Like, the opposite is certainly true.
Right. And so this is one project. So let's talk about other projects that address that, right? This is what you're currently working on, and it's that page. And what else is happening in your sphere that's touching on that as well? I know your first city-funded project, Graduate Level Graffiti, is that still happening in touring?
No, that was probably, gosh, it's 2017 now. That had to be, like, I want to say, like, maybe 2006. And that was funded by the city of Austin. And that was right after I had gotten out of graduate school. So I finished my master's degree in 2003. So it's been a while. But yeah, that was a fun project that involved, like, over 40 artists and was, like, a completely fully interactive, immersive event.
Maybe we should talk about that for a minute, because did that kind of cast the die for how you continued to work with the public after that?
Well, I had a really positive experience. It was the first time I had written a grant, and it was the grant was one of those one-to-one matched grants. So in total, I probably had like $20,000. And for a new, you know, fresh out of graduate school artist, this was, that's like, that felt like so much money. And I wanted to share as much as I could, so I involved as many artists as I could in the project. And it is actually more fun for me. I can only speak for myself. It is more enjoyable to share an experience. Even a negative experience, I feel like, is a better experience when shared, you know? So that is definitely my preference, my working preference. I prefer to work in collaboration with other artists. I am developing a project with another artist named Rachel Ferguson right now. She's in California, and we are going to explore the territory that exists within ourselves, the interior, the black interior, and really focus on
what will that result? Yeah. So talk a little bit more about that, about the interior. So tell me, how will that, if you can talk about that now, potentially evolve and manifest itself? Will it be an interactive community project offline or physically?
It'll probably eclipse a bunch of different platforms. I wouldn't be surprised if it takes place sort of like in all of the places. So online and physically, I know there will be like a traditional sort of gallery style show in January of 2018 in Seattle. But I think it's the kind of exploration that many other artists would like to participate in and don't often have the space, the designated space or permission to do those explorations. So I would like to involve a lot of folks. And, you know, if people are interested in this super teaser idea of, like, exploring the black interior, and I mean that sort of philosophically, and aesthetically, then they should reach out to me. And I'm, you know, you can reach me on the internet. I'm so Googleable through my website, which is like natashamarin.com, and there's a hyphen between my first and last name. That's probably the easiest way to get to me. But I would love for folks to say, if they're interested and intrigued and want to participate, to reach out. I love working with other artists. There's nothing like seeing your idea that was your idea become like our idea, and how much better it is when it's our idea, because it just takes up more territory and space. It has more energy and potential and can go in so many different directions. And I kind of don't understand why all artists aren't always working with each other, but I suppose we do also need the private time to explore on our own. As well. And
well, that's interesting to say, because, you know, that's very interesting. That just the idea of, right, why aren't more artists collaborating all the time? Because as you just articulated, the energy is just multiplied, and it's that much more exciting. So as you move forward, all your work is going to continue to be collaboration, and in a sense, encourage collaboration also by its nature, doesn't it?
It really does, and I will say this is probably not the most intelligent thing to say to a bunch of intelligent people, but many years ago, like at least a decade ago, on YouTube, back in the olden days when there weren't even ads on YouTube, that's how old I am, I saw a video of these farmers, and I want to say they were somewhere in like the United Kingdom, and they had strapped like shields of different colored LED lights to a herd of sheep. So each sheep had like an LED like wrapper like around it of LED lights. And these lights were all programmed to like change colors. And the sheep were herded in like all these amazing different formations, and while the lights are changing, these two gentlemen like recreated the Mona Lisa in like LED shape. And it looked just like the Mona Lisa. And I thought I thought to myself, wow, that everything is on the internet, first of all. And two, these sheep have no idea what they're part of. They have no idea what they're part of. They are making something really beautiful, and they don't know what it is. And I think that humans have that same potential. Like, we don't need to understand everything, but if we work together towards a bigger goal, we could probably level up, like, you know, unlock some new achievements. And right now, as far as I can tell, all around the globe, we are much more interested in separating each other from ourselves than in working together towards some bigger, better version of what it means to be human. Like right now, think about it. There are people on our planet right now who are still fighting to be seen as humans, you know, and I'm one of those people. That is not a good look. You know, like that's just,
right.
We're not really going to do a whole lot of inspiring and amazing things until we get to the point where we've figured out, you know, that we're human collectively and what that really means.
Well, and would you say it's that through more collaboration and potentially even art, if this isn't too sweeping, is partly what can make that evolution possible?
I don't know. I think art is a technology that we use to remember ourselves and to reimagine ourselves. Or if you could make both remember and reimagine future tense words, I think that's what art does for us. And that's why when you look back into sort of the portal of history, what you see are like usually great creative achievements. Sculpture, architecture, engravings, papyrus, cave paintings. We really haven't located like too much ancient spreadsheet action, you know, like the way we fill our days right now is probably not that history making, but we make and remember and keep ourselves as our potentially amazing human beings that we are through the creative, you know, the ways that we express ourselves creatively. And it's too bad that I will just say it, white supremacy does not value these skills as much as, say, like a quote-unquote scientific mind. But when you look at art, it oftentimes is a series of experiments where in which different results are found. Like, I think anyone painting a series or writing a series would certainly say that even if you set out to do the same thing over and over again, the devil's in the details, the excitement is in the nuance, the mutation is what brings about evolution. So I think of myself as a very scientific person, but I don't think I'm valued in the world that way because what I do is called art.
Well, artists are also, I mean, that makes sense and is clear. I mean, there does seem to be some kind of alliance almost, though, between artists of all kinds. I mean, isn't there to some degree, though there's still tons of issues, when you think of just how remarkable it is that in this administration, nobody performed for the inauguration. You know, it wasn't like there was a boycott going out to say, don't perform for Trump and everything, but simply nobody did. And I don't know whether it's, you know, my myopia on this whole thing, but it strikes me that artists are allied in you know, to some degree. Obviously not across the board, but there's some kind of unity perhaps in among art makers, if you will.
I think that's the case. I think that's being very helpful. I think that there are things that we all have in common. I think we all have to give ourselves permission to believe that we're a little special, to focus on our own work in the way that art demands you to. And I mean all creative expression. So whether you're writing a libretto or making like a human body sculpture out of jello and stone, it does require you taking yourself seriously enough to focus on this work and consider it work and thereby make it work by enacting the work. I think that we all have that in common. and that can be a place of shared respect, is that we exert ourselves often in a direction that is not appreciated or even noted by the vast majority of other people on the planet. And it's really not usually about the artist. It's usually about the art. You know, in modern history, there's sort of like this cult of the artist where you have your like Andy Warhols and your Yayoi Kusamas, and people know the person. But prior to that, usually it's the art that has the louder voice as opposed to the artist. You know, it's about sacrificing itself over to the great collective unconsciousness for interpretation.
Right, because certainly the art will last longer than the artist in most cases, as well, right? It really exists independently.
Which is kind of weird working in a digital plane, because I don't know that there's really a precedent for like how long projects that I've created will last, because everything kind of atrophies in the same way. Like archives and atrophies on the internet, you know? Links get broken. There's like a digital degrading situation that happens, you know, in many ways. Like I am sending all of my work out like a message in a bottle, like into the ocean, the ether. And there is no guarantee that anything will be kept in posterity. Everything is kind of like a fan painting.
No, that's so true. Natasha, before we go, I want to ask you what you're reading at the moment. Could be anything at all, or
topic. The last book I read, I'm not even going to remember the title, which makes me feel terrible, but it was published posthumously. So Michael Crichton, who read like Jurassic Park and Sphere, I was like in a bookstore, and I'm like, what? How does he have a new book out? He's been dead for like 9 years. And I was just so like intrigued by this, like, wow, I want to be that amazing as a writer one day that I could just be putting out bestsellers like 9 years after I'm dead. And it was one of the books that he wrote prior to the Jurassic Park series, like that kind of was the inspiration. So if people are like nerdy and like process, they might be interested in this book. And it's obviously Googleable. But that was like the last book I read for pleasure. I have books that I keep with me pretty close by with me, kind of like the way people might have like a pocket Bible. And for me, those books are like The History of White People by Nell Painter, like how white people came to become white people. That's a really great book if people are interested. Nicole Fleetwood's Troubling Vision, which is about performance, visuality, and blackness. That's really academic. And then I also have been really trying my best to get through Astrid Ensslin's Literary Gaming, because I think ludic philosophy is pretty rad. And the ways in which the real and digital worlds are eclipsing now makes me really excited to be alive. And then for, like, pure literary people, I would suggest The Songs of the Dragons Flying to Heaven and Other Plays by Young Jean Lee. That's another text I go back to very often. That feels like a friend. You know, these are books that feel like friends.
I'm so glad you mentioned those. Great books. Natasha, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.